Welcome to Elegance in Every Step. I'm your maitre d', Mary Postlethwaite. We hope you've come famished. We've prepared the finest table just for you. Our special today is Hungry, a dish we've been perfecting for 21 seasons now. Your table is alongside another guest. It might feel a bit unusual. However, we encourage you to dive in and hear their story. Today, we're serving up a conversation about craving the right things in life. Sit back, enjoy a complimentary appetizer. Your host, Neil Matthews, will be along shortly to guide you through today's meal. Bon appetit.
Yes, welcome in, one and all, other people's shoes. Maybe we should start saying the restaurant edition as we dive in, as we take in this fine dining experience for you today. Ali Murphy, by the way, that is the voice that you hear at the beginning of our episodes this season. So kind of her to voice that for us. She added that French element at the end of that. I was thinking about that as we sat down to record today. The craziest thing, perhaps, that maybe I've eaten. I do remember on a cruise ship having duck. For those of you that know me, know that I live in Oregon, so it's always this push-pull like North Carolina, Oregon. I remember eating duck, and I just remember feeling really bad. I was eating Donald or Daisy, one of the other DuckTale people. Uncle Scrooge. It was really slimy. So those duck connoisseurs out there who have had duck, let me know. Did I just get a bad duck? Was that a lame duck, perhaps? I don't know. The jokes may get funnier. Probably not. Maybe somebody that can help us along the way with our duck story or not duck story is my new friend, Brandon. Brandon, how are you today?
I'm doing really well. Thanks, Neil. And you're not crazy. Duck is greasy and gross. I'm sorry. It's just...
I sent it back.
It's nasty.
I truly sent it back. It was so little. And I remember getting it and I thought, man, no wonder in the Mickey's Christmas Tale, there wasn't a lot there for poor old Bob Cratchit.
Well, it had to make it worse that you were thinking Donald Duck, because that's just sad. I've never had duck I like. I know people love it, but I've never had duck I like.
Maybe that's why I'm not a duck fan. Da-da-ching. Right. All right. Oh, there it is. See, that's one sports joke down. You are in the Colorado area. Now, I myself have been through the Colorado area. I've never been to Colorado Springs. I had aspirations of going there at one point in time. The denomination I was a part of, the Christian and Missionary Alliance, is in, at least they used to be, I don't know, I've been out of the denomination, they used to be in Colorado Springs. So one day I was like, I'm going to go to the headquarters, it's going to be amazing, and I never went there. But I did fly through Denver not that long ago, and I was very excited to see that you guys had a Quiznos in the Denver International Airport. We almost missed our flight home, and so I was racing through like Home Alone to get to our next flight to stop it, and I saw Quiznos, so I'm running by and I'm like, I really wanted to stop and say hi to Quiznos. The only reason why I would come to Colorado. Is there another reason I should come?
Oh, there's a ton of reasons why you should come to Colorado. It's beautiful, first of all. Genuinely, the mountains are gorgeous. If you're an outdoors kind of guy, if you like the hiking, if you like all the stuff, it's all there. You can't beat the hiking and the sightseeing if that's what you're into. It's true though that the food scene in Colorado, there's not like a Colorado cuisine, unfortunately. There's just, I guess everybody here is too crunchy. They're all too worried about going outside. It's smoothies, maybe. You can get a good smoothie here.
So grape nut cereal probably on every aisle. Yeah. Perhaps some granola.
Yeah.
So our favorite question to lead off every show with, and that's this, is what size shoes do you wear?
10 and a half or 11, depending on the brand. So Merrell's is my preferred brand, and I'm always 11.
Oh, look at you. You are so ready and prepared. You're like, I know the brand. I'm ready to go. Merrell's.
No, it matters. The brand of shoe matters.
Yes, it does. I tell people that all the time. Now, Merrell's, I'm not familiar with. Give me a little more on Merrell's.
Colorado crunchy. They're a hiking shoe. They're trail running shoes. They have a lot of hiking boots and things like that. For whatever reason, I started wearing Merrell's in high school and they fit my feet so well. I've tried other brands. They're expensive. And I'm like, I should try something else. Nope. Comes down to it. That's what I need. That's what I want. I buy a new pair about every year and Merrell knows me. They send me a little postcard with like a 20% off every year, right about the time I'm going to buy them. And I'm like, how do you know? And there it is.
Can you maybe talk to the company called Jumpman perhaps? And maybe they could work something out with me. Like every year they could just know maybe me and send
Wouldn't
me
one. Wouldn't that be
awesome? Be amazing. Yeah. My wife loves to hike. So homework assignment for you. Not required, maybe suggested with an arm tug behind your back. Table Rock.
Yeah.
Hiking Table Rock. I'm very blessed where our house has been built now. We are smack dab right next to the two Table Rocks. We have Upper Table Rock and Lower Table Rock, and I might have them backwards on the screen, but we've hiked them both, and they're amazing. I mean, I just took them for granted. Living in Southern Oregon, we have Table Rock, big deal. We've hiked them ever since I was a kid. We had some friends come out from Virginia who I actually met podcasting, Adria and her husband, Eric, and that was the number one thing Eric wanted to do was he wanted to hike Table Rock. And I just thought, this is no big deal. And he was so enamored the whole time, like taking pictures and looking at the birds and the flowers. I'm like, man, this is going to be the longest hike of my life. And it's literally like a half mile up and a half mile. If you get to the edge, it might be a 5K all the way around. But my point is like, he was so enamored with Table Rock. And I'm like, it's not that exciting. The thing is it's so special to other people.
Yeah.
And so maybe that leads into my first question for you is, when you think about this idea of hungry, what makes that so special for you and maybe gets you a little enamored and a little bit excited when you think about this idea of hungry?
For me, in the work that I do now, and my life has brought me to this place where hungry, for me, it's hungry for more of God, more relationship, more depth. The reason they want to talk or the reason they want to come to our ministry is because it's like, I want to hear God's voice. I want to know, I want to experience him. And for me, that's why I'm doing it. I am hungry to not just know about God, which I have a lot of knowledge about God. My background is academic. My background is theology. Found myself at a point in life where it was like, okay, I know a lot of things about God, but do I actually know him? Do I know Jesus? And he called me out on that. You need to learn how to relate to me with your heart and your soul, not just your head. That's the track I've been on now since 2020 with my wife. The reason I loved the season hungry was because it's like, dude, that is what I do. The ministry I do, we say this all the time. It's more for me than it is for anybody else. Like, God knows me. He knows I need to be doing this because it's so easy for me to slip away and just sort of, if you want to use the table analogy, if the feast is Jesus, his presence, the relation, knowing him, doing life with him, if you want to say it that way, you know, it's really easy for me to sort of, I'm going to walk away from the table for a while and be happy with my memory of it rather than actually being with him. For me, that idea of hungry for God, hungry for more of him, hungry for a deeper relationship. And that's true even in, that's even true in my relationships with people. I've always wanted that. I hate surface level stuff. I want to go deep. I want friends.
My wife and I, we've been digitizing home videos when we were kids.
Yeah.
VHS now into digital form. And my mom had a box of VHS tapes and she gave them to us and said, here, have them digitized and let me know what the login is so I can enjoy them too. And I said, yeah, absolutely. There was one of my granny at Christmas and she's sitting at her table and she's interacting with the camera and I'm kind of in the background and I'm sitting at the table with her. And when I started thinking about hungry and this idea of coming to a table, maybe even and having a meal and Allie Murphy, by the way, she did fantastic. Just taking my vision of what I had in mind and just put it into just magical words. It's amazing what she did. Just want to give her a little shout out. But man, I want that so bad. And what you're describing of Jesus at this table, the great 80s, 90s band, Audio Adrenaline. He has a big, big house and a big, big table with lots and lots of food. And we're going to play football in the yard. And I mean, it's one of my favorite Audio Adrenaline songs. I don't know if I'm always welcomed at his table.
Mm-hmm.
David in scripture, and you probably know this way better than I do. David invites people to his table. And there are people that didn't feel welcome. Not that David was so unwelcoming, but they didn't feel worthy. There it is. Worthy enough to sit at the table. Can't ever say his name correctly, so I'm not going to try, but he had the deformities with his hands and his feet. You remember that guy? Meshulep? I can't say his name. I was not even going to try about that. I hear he's going to bail me out, but you didn't bail me out, Brandon. Sorry.
Don't know how to say it either.
But you know who I'm talking about. This guy that has the deformities with his hands and his feet, and he comes to David's table and doesn't feel worthy enough to sit at the table. That's how I felt most of my life growing up in church, is sin has kept me from the table.
Mm-hmm.
My attitude has kept me from the table. Mm-hmm. My pride has kept me from the table.
Mm-hmm.
We take communion every Sunday at our church, which whatever. Some people are like, what? That's weird. My point is there are times that I've come to the communion table, metaphorically speaking, in my own little chair, and I'm looking down at the cup and they're stacked together, and I unstack them, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm worthy to even take this.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm alone in this.
No.
I'm sure I am, right?
No, not at all. I think everybody feels that way. Look, you got to start with the reality that that's a true statement in a certain way. We are unworthy. I'm telling this story to a friend of mine recently. I went to a conference not too long ago, and the whole conference was on the topic of shame. And they spent 3 days talking about false shame. The shame you feel like if you've been abused. The abusers usually use shame to keep their victim silent. They tell you it's your fault. Or shame that we carry from childhood where we didn't understand what was going on with our parents and we felt bad and we thought it was our fault. And that's good. Like, I am so glad there was a conference about that topic because there's a lot of false shame in the world. But I'm sitting in this conference listening to story after story of false shame. And I'm saying, for every story of somebody who has false shame put upon them, there's another person who has real shame. They've sinned. They've caused that hurt. I've been that person at times in my life. I've hurt people. So I was talking to another conference goer, a good friend of mine, and I was like, at the end of the conference, I'm like, dude, it's like they missed half the audience. Like, they didn't address the shame that half of us carry. Really wisely looks at me and goes, no, they missed the entire audience. And I was like, that's true. All of us have sin. All of us have stuff. So there's a sense in which, yeah, I am unworthy. Here's the thing that matters. Where does permission to sit at the table come from? Like, who decides whether you get to sit at the table or not? Is it you? Is it me? Like, who decides whether I get to sit at the table with Jesus? Well, as soon as I say that, you know the right answer. It's Jesus. He decides whether I sit at the table or not. Okay, so are you worthy if you look at yourself and say, here's all the stuff I've done? Tim, can I curse on your show? Heck no, right? You're not.
You can say whatever you need.
You can beep it out, right? No, you're not worthy unless the king says you are. And if he says, hey, come sit at my table, I want you here, then first of all, here's the thing. Nobody else gets to argue. I could be like, I know Neil, he doesn't deserve it. Why does he get to sit next to Jesus at the table? Who do I have to argue with, you or Jesus? Go talk to Jesus and see what he says. Okay, so here's the cool part. Psalm 23, we all know it. We all know Psalm 23. But have you ever noticed that it goes through this pattern, which is God provides all my needs. He gives me open spaces. Even when I'm in the worst possible places, the valleys overshadowed by death where I think I'm going to die. Well, he's even there. He makes a table for me in the presence of my enemies. Okay, so that means when I'm in the worst of the worst, the suffering, shame, the guilt, all the stuff, or even just false shame, the job is not to keep walking. The job is to sit down and let Jesus do it. Like, that's what I do in the valley. And then it ends. Surely, goodness and faithful love, or goodness and mercy, will pursue me all the days of my life. Whatever God is thinking, dude, he thinks you're worth pursuing. And we flip that so easily. I need to pursue God. And there's a way in which that's true. But I think God really wants us to know, you're worthy to sit at my table, he says, because I want you to. Everybody asks the very next question, which makes perfect sense. Totally on board with this, which is why? Why does God want me? Why does God say I'm worthy? I do this with my wife all the time, and she's way smarter than me. My wife's name is Leave. It's like, Leave, why do you love me? And she literally does know to say now. She's like, because I do, stupid. Because if she answered the question with anything, well, you're a good provider, or I like the way you do this, then immediately she knows me. I'm going to be like, I'm not good enough. I didn't do, you know. So why does she love me? Because she chose to, period. And I can't argue with that. What am I going to tell her? Well, you shouldn't. Maybe she shouldn't, but she doesn't care. So why does Jesus love you? Because he wants to. That's the kind of guy God is. He pursues people.
Maybe you grew up in a different middle school than I did. And there was a middle school moment for me that I remember. I'm looking at the vast amount of tables in the cafeteria. And there's everybody's got their own little pocket of people.
Yeah.
There was the Hispanic group. There was the Hick group, country kids, athlete groups, the popular kids group. And my buddy Cody and I visually go there in my mind. Mm. And I remember it's like the first week of middle school. And I looked at him and I said, where should we sit? Mm-hmm. And like waiting for the response, you know, back. Mm-hmm. And he said, man, I don't know. What's the right table? Mm-hmm. So all these like table analogies that God keeps flooding my mind with, you know, the granny story, the Cody story in middle school. And there's so many others. For me, I keep thinking I'm not worthy to sit at that table. I'm not worthy to sit at that table. I'm not worthy to sit at that table. I start going down the I'm not worthy list. Mm-hmm. Where does that get you if you allowed yourself to maybe have that mindset? And maybe others, mm-hmm. again, if they heard you and they're like, well, wow, I thought I was alone in that.
For me, the deepest fear that drives my feelings of being rejectable, hateable, is that I'm going to be seen as being stupid or incompetent. That's genuinely my greatest fear. And has driven most of my darkest sins. I am so afraid that you're going to think that I'm stupid or can't handle something, that I am half the reason I pursued the degrees I pursued, which, you know, are great, but half the reason was to prove to myself and then to try to manipulate everybody else and prove to them that I'm competent and that I'm okay and that you should like me. And dude, that's a wicked cycle. I think we a lot of us get stuck. We all get stuck in that in some way or another. We're all kind of trying to prove to ourselves by seeing it in the face of everybody around us. If I could make you like me, I think this is the way it works. If I fool you into liking me, okay, well, that means I'm not as stupid as I feel like I am. Of course, the problem is as soon as I fool you into liking me, then a fool likes me and I don't like you. And I'm like, that's... So it backfires every time. But yeah, dude, I get it. I think you told me that the episode right before this was on body image. Dude, it's all about it. We all have an image of ourselves that sucks. And somebody listening is that way is going, yeah, my fear is that I haven't accomplished enough. Do you go to bed at night and have a checklist before you can fall asleep? Did I do everything? Oh man, that hurts, dude. I'm sorry that's how you feel if that's where you are. But you're not alone. Everybody in the world is wearing a mask, trying to prove to themselves that they're safe and they're significant.
I think that's what makes podcasting so hard sometimes. Is to me, I always feel like I need to somehow validate what I've done and what I've accomplished.
Yeah.
Who do I need to compare myself to? Mm. And that's the problem that I run into in life is so many times I look at the guys at my church, I'll pick on them for a second, and I think, man, they're reading their Bibles every day. They're having the most amazing quiet time, man. Their wife loves them and their wife probably prays every day for them and they're fasting and they're giving blankets to the homeless and they're probably finding ways to cure cancer. And here I am doing a podcast. Mm. And I think the part that hurts me the most that people say that really stings still to this day is somebody said, you know what, Neil, your show is an idol.
Mm.
You worship your show. And I was like, my show does nothing for me. It doesn't redeem my sins. It doesn't forgive me. Mm-hmm. It gives me an outlet to talk about things that are in my head that I can't figure out how to get out. That's mm-hmm. really... There it is. Mm-hmm. You want to know why I do a podcast? Mm-hmm. It's because there's things that come into my head during a fast, during a whatever, during a quiet time, during a prayer moment that I'm like, you know what? I've dealt with this. I wonder if others have as well. And then I go find somebody that maybe has dealt with this. And I say, man, how did you or Susie or Betty or Johnny or Susie, you know, whoever, how did you get through this? To try to provide an outlet for somebody to go, man, they got through it. I think I can get through it too.
Yeah. Well, first of all, even if your show is an idol, welcome to the human race, my friend. You know, like we make idols out of everything because we look to anything. And it makes perfect sense. I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying this. We are born into a world that is broken, a world that demands, whether it's culture or our own heads, demands that we prove ourselves, demands that we make our own way in the world. So I get it. So we're constantly looking for ways to control it. Looking for ways to secure ourselves, looking for ways to prove our significance. And that's an idol. An idol is what do I look to that validates me, like you said? What do I look to that gives me that sense of I matter or I'm safe? So you're not going to escape making idols. Here's what I want people to know. I don't have an answer for you that fixes you so that you suddenly stop making idols of things. If I had that, I would be a billionaire. What I have for you is this. Jesus, God, knows that about you. He is sad and he wants to help. He wants to rescue you from that. He wants to rescue me from that. My background, I have this phrase that God can't stand to be around sin. And I just think that's false. Just look at the way the Bible works. Adam and Eve sinned, and what's the first thing God did? He came and clothed them and promised the Savior. The Israelites constantly mess up. And what's he do? He keeps coming and feeding them. He dwells right. He literally teaches them to build a tent where he can dwell in the middle of the camp. The whole story of scripture is God getting closer and closer and closer to us after we ran away until he finally becomes one of us. Because we are his beloved children, the people he created, our sin attracts him. He wants to rescue us from it. We hear that he wants to rescue us from it. It's bad. That's why he wants to come and help us. I think the practice, the really practical thing that we can do when we start to recognize we have idols, I make an idol of my ministry, for heaven's sake. Clearly, my significance is about my success in a ministry. When I see that, whenever you notice that happens, I'm just going to invite you to gently turn your attention to what Jesus has already done about it. That's prayer. Prayer is just to turn my attention. All right, today, Lord, I made an idol of my podcast, my ministry, my job, my wife, whatever, yesterday. Okay, I'm back here saying, you love me. You have died for me. You have forgiven me. You're the one that's doing it. You were faithful for me. I suck at this. Honestly, I really suck at this life thing. I am not very good at it. And anybody who looks at my ministry and says, oh, he must have it figured out. He must pray 30 minutes every day. I don't. I fail at it all the time. That's why Jesus died. That's the point. So turn your attention again, just one more time, whenever you notice it, gently. All right, Jesus is the one that's doing the work. Trust him.
What's the problem with Christianity in your mind? And I chose the word Christianity, by the way.
Mm. I'll reference my hero. This is going to make me sound super nerdy, but that's just, it's just true. My faith was literally saved by Soren Kierkegaard in college. He's a Danish philosopher, Christian philosopher. He really hated what he called Christendom, which in his day in the Danish church, it was all about you could be a Christian. It was the cultural thing to do. The whole church was, it was all political. Priests and pastors were put into office by the government. And so you were a Christian, but you didn't have to believe anything. Like you could literally not believe in the Bible at all and be a Christian. And he had a real problem with that. And I think that's where I'm at here today still. I still find that issue. I think Jesus is real. Like I actually think that Jesus was a real human being who really walked on the face of the planet, who really is God, who really died and really rose again. I actually think that's true and real, like as real as gravity. And if it is, then I think what he said and what he did actually matters for me. And that's where we started this, like, what are you hungry for? I'm hungry for that. I'm hungry for it to be real for people because I think it's an actual answer. What we end up doing with it, what Christianity, here's the answer, what I think most of Christianity does to it. And I have compassion for this. Like, let me say, I get why this happens. I used to be really angry about this. And now I just see these people as being people who need him just as much as I do. We're afraid to let it be real. We struggle to believe that God could actually love us, that Jesus actually meant what he said. I didn't come into the world to condemn the world, but to save it. We're afraid. Well, I mean, it makes sense. Nobody else in the entire world that I've ever met has that kind of actual love. It's really hard to believe that he would, because nobody else is unconditional that way, not even my wife. And I'm not blaming her. I'm just saying no other human being can be, because we're all in the same boat. I think Christianity or Christendom sort of keeps us all at arm's length from God by sort of making it about get the right answers on the Sunday school exam, say the right things about Jesus so you're in the right crowd. A lot of Christian talk is really just tribal language. I'm proven to you that I'm in the same tribe as you because that makes me safe. Well, but what if Jesus was real and he really meant what he said? Then that would mean that tomorrow I can wake up and go, I know God loves me. I know he loves me because Jesus said so and he died for me and he rose again. And that's not just a intellectual exercise.
The hard part I run into is I've met Mormons. I've met not as many Jehovah's Witnesses, definitely Mormons who have said, or LDS, sorry, they like to be mm-hmm. called LDS, have said, no, I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. I've met people who said, yeah, I'm a Christian. And their mm-hmm. their lifestyle, their mouth, their attitude, their lack of love doesn't mm-hmm. scream believer, Christ follower. I've been struggling with this passage. I'm kind of proof texting here. So I'm going to use your New Testament survey. So tap into that brain cell, okay. You know, part of your brain right now. All right. You ready? It comes Maybe. out of 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. It says, to this you were called because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of you in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could change it to me.
I gotcha, yeah.
Christ said this to me.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, please.
What do you think his steps are? What does that phrase mean to you when you say, I should follow Jesus in his steps?
And that's the part I'm hung up on.
Yeah.
Where this season came out of was as I did two different fasts, specifically about this season. It just happened fasting, and I was like, man, I'm really hungry for some chicken nuggets. Man, I'm really hungry for some pizza. Man, I really want some chow mein. Fried rice was one of them. Sushi even. And my wife's like, what is going on with you? I don't know. I'm just really hungry. She's like, clearly, I just have this hungering. She goes, what? What did you say? I was like, I don't know. Hungry? Is that it? Can people be hungry? She goes, yes, people can be hungry. You're hungry right now. And it got me thinking, even when I was growing up, Sprite had this amazing campaign. And I actually just saw it on Instagram, which kind of creeps me out a little bit because I said it out loud and then I saw a commercial about it, which I was like,
right,
that's weird. And so I'm purposely now saying it because I want to see if the algorithm really is listening. So here's the commercial. It says, obey your thirst, Sprite. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was super simple, but I was like, man, that is genius. And it got me thinking again back to this season, this idea of hungering and obeying my thirst. What am I thirsting for? What am I hungering after? Back to your question to me, which by the way, I don't like, Brandon. Rule number one of Neil's show, you don't ask Neil questions. That's my job. We'll allow this one time. We'll give you a mulligan. That's the struggle I'm running into. For my whole life growing up, from the time of 19, probably a little bit malformed growing up in the church, as I was told from a young age, you're so talented of a speaker, the way you can tell a story, the way your Bible knowledge, probably one of the best Awana kids, not bragging. I had a lot of badges. I was pretty good at memorizing stuff. Couldn't read really well, so I had to learn real quick how to memorize. And I learned that skill real fast. I can retain scripture pretty well. I don't know where it comes from. I think a little bit of it is me and my brain of how it remembers things. But also, I think a lot of it is the Holy Spirit. Give credit where credit's due. 8 years almost, 7 years almost. Kind of ironic when the show started and this period. I've really been struggling with where's my role in the church. Mm. I've been a youth guy forever. I've taught fourth and fifth grade little kids. I've taught, you know, middle school and high school as long as I can remember. And for the first time in my life, I'm really at the point where I'm like, I don't want to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know in answer to your question. And I hate the I don't know because I get it all the time from my 18-year-old daughter. I'm like, what do you think about this, Adia? And she's like, I don't know. I'm like, I hate that answer. I don't know what that looks like.
Yeah.
And it scares me.
Yeah. I hear you. Me too. I think there's two questions there. One is like, what's my role? I'm not sure that that's the question of what does it mean to follow in Jesus's footsteps? My perspective on that has shifted a lot. You mentioned you go to church and have communion every Sunday. So my church usually does too. I'm a Lutheran, and so my background is studying Luther. Here's what he cracked my head open on this one. There's two ways in which we think about righteousness. And there's this external righteousness that's between you and me. Am I a good guy to you? Do I pay my bills? Do I keep my promises, etc.? Do I give the homeless guy on the side of the street a buck or not? Then there's this other kind of internal thing, this righteousness of the heart. And this is not the only way we talk about two kinds of righteousness, but there's a way in which we can say there's this righteousness before God. And that's that righteousness that is love God above all, love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. I think most of the time, and for most of my life, as I've looked at something like walk in Jesus's shoes, be like Christ, I've immediately assumed that that's talking about the external stuff. Jesus was helpful to the poor. Jesus was kind. Jesus was loving. Neil, you might be different than me. I don't think you are. I'm going to just tell you from my side of things, the reason I want to be like Christ and all that external stuff is right back to, I want to control how you think of me. If I'm a loving person, if I'm kind, if you think I'm humble, if I'm the good guy at church that everybody likes, then frankly, to me, that's how I protect myself. It's me trying to win status and favor in your eyes. Is that why Jesus did it?
I'll answer that. No.
Yeah. I want to be like Jesus because that'd make me like Jesus. Let's go look at what Jesus was like in scripture, literally what he did with his life. What were the steps that he followed through from birth to death? It starts with being a baby that can't do anything, being cared for by humans. Sure, we have the one passage of when he's a kid where it's like he grew in wisdom and stature. What was that? He was listening to people. He was just listening. He was following. Then you get to his ministry and it starts with God saying, this is my beloved son. He's baptized and God says, this is my beloved son. The next thing that happens is immediately, says Mark, he goes out into the wilderness for 40 days to get tempted. And then the rest of his ministry is a walk to the cross. The righteousness that Jesus has that we are asked to emulate is not all this external stuff first. It's faith first. It's trusting. I don't do anything but what I see my Father doing. All right, Lord, says Jesus, I don't want to die. I don't want to go to the cross. That's the only way, then I will. Like literally the prayer that he taught us, thy will be done, thy kingdom come. All right, that's, I think, when we're asked to be like Christ, What we're asked to do is surrender. We're asked to first and foremost turn to Jesus and say, okay, your will. I trust you. If you want me to not have a role in church, all right, I trust you. Faith is that surrender to God's will. I have experienced in my own life, that is what has actually changed some of the external behavior, because I'm not trying to control your opinion anymore. I'm not trying to get something. I'm just, now it's a lot freer. Now I can be light, kind, and loving, but I'm not even really thinking about it all that much. This is the entire reason I do the work I do. If I could get myself and everyone else to spend more time saying to Jesus, all right, Lord, thank you. All right, I'm just going to look at you. I'm going to trust you. Whatever. I'm significant because you say so. All right. The hard one, I'm safe because you're with me. All right. I believe it. It's a lot easier to do the external stuff. It's a lot easier.
It's so hard. We've transitioned from middle school into now high school. It's hard because we look around and listen, I'm guilty of this. I had one of these. Maybe others did as well. I had a Letterman's jacket. Worked really hard for that. Yeah. Worked really hard for that. Put in a lot of hours on the track. I was a track and cross country runner. And then somehow, some way, I lettered in television. I don't know how to this day. I really don't know how that happened. Truly.
Like, that's awesome.
Performing arts assembly. And they're like, here you go, Neil. Here's another M for your jacket. And I'm like, I'm not putting this blue M on my athletic jacket. No, that's not going to happen. And I put it in a box. I lettered in television, of all things. But my point is that that jacket, when I wore it, man, three times I got to wear it before my girlfriend, now wife, stole it and took it away from me. There was a sense of pride. There was a sense of accomplishment. Like, I was somebody. My name was on the back of it. I was important. Mm-hmm. And I feel like church has almost become high school all over again for me. And again, maybe it's the church I'm in. I don't know. Maybe it's just my jaded view of church, of growing up in a church. I've seen it in most churches that I've been to. Again, you got your cliques of people. I don't read that in the Gospels. I don't read it where Jesus is like, okay, you know, Simon and... But wait, I do. I feel like I do. And this is my conjecture. The transfiguration. He takes James, John, and Peter to the mountain, and they get to see Moses and Elijah. And, Lord, should we build them tents? Like, what should we do here? And it's like, well, what about the other disciples? They didn't get to be a part of that cool clique. And you have James and John always fighting over who's going to sit at the right and who's going to sit at the left. And it's like,
yeah.
Brothers, come on. Like, do you know what you're asking? It also gives me comfort. It also says to me, we're not alone. We're always fighting for the position. Yeah. We're always fighting for the next seat at the table. But how did you get rid of that? Or have you?
I don't know if the question is, how did you get rid of that? If I have, I think what I offer is just that compassion of humans be humans, man. Sinners be sinners. It's a little naive when you think about it. Like, we want to see people in the church be different. We want them to not be like the high school clique, you know, the high school clubs. And amen. I want that too. They have the resources not to, so it's easy to be like, why is the church no different than anybody else? And I guess I want to offer a little bit of compassion and say, it's because they're humans too. They're sinners too. Yeah, every church is full of sinners. And thank God. I mean, that's where, at least they're in the right place. You know, like, they're in the right spot. It's like that guy that sits two rows in front of you in church that is a real crotchety jerk and you can't stand him. And every Sunday you go, it's like, it's hard to not boil at the fact that that jerk is in church. What I want to say is, yeah, righteous anger. He's a jerk. You're right. On the other hand, I also want to say, maybe take comfort. Because if that guy's there and that guy can be loved and Jesus cares for that guy, then you have a chance. Man, I got a chance. Like, we're in the right spot, bro.
Brandon, that is terrible advice. We're going to go ahead and take that part out. I struggle with that all the time because I have a list. Admitting this shamefully, but I struggle with writing people off. I struggle with giving grace. The hard part is that you don't even know that I've put you on my list because I've never told you. I just am done with you. And then when you're around me, I just have disdain towards you and I treat you like trash. That's not in the Gospels, by the way. He didn't do those things.
Yeah.
I don't know how to fix that. And I guess that's the hard part that I keep running against and fighting against.
That is perfect. That's an actual thing. And now we're not talking abstractly. One of the questions I would ask somebody, I would ask myself once I got to that specific, take some time with that. Remember the last time you wrote somebody off with that kind of, they don't even know it. You're just pissed at them.
Sorry.
You just think they're trash. What do you perceive in that situation is threatening? Why do you need to write them off? And that's really hard to answer if you haven't spent some time in a safe place unpacking some of your past, maybe some of your issues. I'll bet there's a pattern to the people that you write off. And I'll bet some of it has to do with they threaten your sense of significance. There's something in there that you see in them. You're afraid you're that way. You are afraid they're hurting people that you love. You're afraid that they're going to ruin something for you and your family or your kids. Like, there's a reason for the angry and there's a reason for the writing off. Okay, so then the question is, let's talk about those things with Jesus. Let's let Jesus actually address those fears. Are you actually threatened by this person? What does Jesus say about you? That will help. I promise over time that will help you with it. You will find greater compassion. But then the bigger thing is to say, right before we even do any of that, is just to say this. Yes, Neil, you and I, we are judgmental. And that's not like Jesus. But guess what? Jesus is compassionate for us. Even if you never fully fix it. I'm not faithful. You're not faithful. That's why Jesus was faithful for me.
Brandon, you suck. Let me just say that. I say that with respect. You should. I think you've given people a lot of food for thought. Pun intended. Mm. The reality is I think there's still some dishes in life that people, I'm never going to eat that. For me, if you ever invited me to Colorado Springs and your wife makes this amazing meal for me, she's like, hey, your friend from Oregon's in here. Let's have some peas. I would politely say to your wife, thank you, but I don't eat peas. I'm wondering about that for people right now. There's things in their life. There's people in their life. There's churches in their life. There's this Jesus guy in their life that has been around them. Probably maybe their whole life in some form or facet in my mind. It's not like he just showed up on the scene. He's been around a while. That it's like peace for them. Again, it could be Jesus. It could be church. It could be church people. It could be maybe they're an atheist and they're like, no, listen. And they're shoving the peas away. They're like, listen, I know you prepared them all day. No, thank you. We taught my daughter from a young age, as I said, 18 now. We called it a no thank you bite. You had to take one no thank you bite. You had to take a bite and then you had to politely say no thank you, but you still had to try it. There's a story. I wasn't there. My mom made peas for my daughter. My daughter calls my mom Grammy. My mom puts the peas in front of my daughter. And Adia says, Grammy, I don't have to eat those. My dad says I don't have to. And my mom, without even skipping a beat, says, well, your dad's not here. I'm in charge. You're going to eat them. And she says, no, I'm not. I'm going to take one no thank you bite and be done. And so she takes like two peas, muscles them down, I guess, like somehow swallows them and says no thank you and almost throws up. My mom's like, how dare you taught her that? And I'm like, no, that's how we operate. And I said, and second off, mom, why are you giving my daughter peas? You know she doesn't like them. I don't like them. Don't give them peas. Is maybe there is a no thank you bite. Maybe somebody can ingest something and say, okay, that's not for me. And that's okay. There's a boundary that can be put in place. There's other things that can put in place. Is that a good idea? Or should we just muscle down the peas and just put a brave face on and stop being a baby and eat the peas? What do you think?
I think that God is far more, the cheesy way to say it is he's a lot smarter than you and I. Like he knows when, he's not going to force it down your throat. He knows when you need to hear it and when you don't. And he respects the boundaries when he knows it's the right thing to do. And he doesn't when he knows it's the right thing to do that. So it's never, I don't think anybody's ever left with this like, all right, dude, just suck it up and deal. My advice is to people, if you sense that you might be willing, there's a lot of like outs there. I think this is a really great way to do it. You talk to yourself. Look, I know there's something here. I know I got something to deal with. I got a sin. I got a fear. I got an anger. I've got wounding. I've been hurt and abused by a church, whatever. If right now you're kind of sort of going, I feel like I might be willing to deal with this, to talk to somebody about this, to get some help with this. You talk to yourself and you say, okay, well, what are you willing to do? Are you willing to make a phone call? Nope, not willing to make a phone call. Okay, are you willing to send an email? Maybe. All right, are you willing to read a blog post? Yeah, I could do that. All right, well, let's do that. This is a way that I work with directees all the time. It's a sense, we sense that God is inviting you into a place of grief or a place of confession or a place of desire with him. Are you willing to do it right now? No? Okay. Let me know when you are and we'll do it together. I just don't feel the pressure to push anybody. I think God knows what he's doing better than I do. So I'm going to wait and see. I don't know. You willing?
Side post in ministries. Why start it? Why be a part of it? I mean, it's a very clever name, by the way. I do have to applaud that. But why start it? Why get involved? And then how are you helping folks over there? And why should someone reach out if they're maybe in this crazy, chaotic spot.
Yep. It's signpost N, I-N-N, like the N at the crossroads. And that's the idea. My wife and I started this ministry in 2020 because we felt like a lot of people were slipping through the cracks in church. People were hurting. We were hurting. And I don't have an answer, dude. I don't have a curriculum. I don't have the five ways to get closer to God. What I have is a space, open space. And that's why it's an N. It's like everybody's at a crossroads at life at some point in time. And wouldn't it be nice if you look to the side of the road and there's a door open, there's warm lights on, there's fresh bread in the oven. You walk in and somebody says, "What do you need? Glad you're here." And if you want to sit down and have a conversation, great. If you want to sit down and be left alone in the corner and just eat, that's fine too. We're not here to tell you what to do. Because I don't know which path you're supposed to take, but I do know that God knows it. And I'm happy to sit with you as we discern that together if you want to. That's the metaphor. What do we actually do? Spiritual direction, which is sort of like spiritual counseling, sort of. It's not therapy. I'm not a therapist. Spiritual counseling. It's me and you talking to Jesus together, letting Jesus minister to you, invite you, heal you. That's done one-on-one. It's totally confidential. I do that over Zoom. I do that in person. Most people I meet virtual. It's like having a hiking buddy on the spiritual path with you. We have our own podcast called the Signpost In Podcast, where we dive in deep to these things. And we have an email that comes out every week that's intended to offer compassion and then lift your gaze from the chaos of life so that you're looking to Jesus. So everything we do is around that. A lot of content, podcast, email, books, spiritual direction, which is again, one-on-one. Yeah, if people are interested in that, the website is just signpostinn.org, the Signpost In Podcast. You can search it anywhere. I would encourage that. Go check us out. Listen to some of our stuff first. And then if you feel like, you know, spiritual direction is not for everybody, but if you feel like, yeah, I'd like to explore some of myself and Jesus together, then it's really easy to click the spiritual direction link on our website. And I'll meet with you for free to start with. We'll talk about it. See if it's a good fit and go from there.
It's awesome. Well, Brandon, thanks so much for coming on today. I feel like we need some laughter. What do you think?
It gets heavy fast.
I felt like it was heavy. I know you've done a number of podcasts and you yourself are a podcast host. As we saw, a little bit of glimpse of that, asking me questions, which is totally not okay. That will come out in your review later, so don't worry for that. This is called Heel Hustle. It's our fun game that we do at the end of the show. So here we go, Heel Hustle.
It's now that time in the show to play the fastest growing game in the podcast world. We call it Heel Hustle. Today, our guest will try to answer all six of these questions in 60 seconds or less to win a prize from our prize closet. Audience, feel free to play at home. Let's put 60 seconds on that clock. Ready, set, hustle!
The game begins in 3, 2, 1.
One person you would trade places with for a week.
My wife, leave. Easy.
Oh, wow. Nice layup there. Guilty pleasure.
EDM music. Easy.
DDM?
EDM, electronic dance music.
Okay, EDM. My bad. Best compliment you've ever received.
What are you going to do with your philosophy degree? Think deep thoughts about being unemployed? Yes.
Wow. Worst piece of advice ever. Worst piece of advice ever.
Think like an idiot when I was trying to help with kids camp.
Right. Something you wish you were better at.
Literally everything. Okay, that doesn't count. I wish I was better at woodworking.
Okay. What is something that never fails to make you laugh?
The Simpsons.
Oh, man. I think it was close. We'll have to go to the judges on that. The Simpsons. All right.
I love The Simpsons.
All right. Some may throw rocks at that. Your halo's on too tight if you're throwing rocks. I'm just saying. Brandon, seriously, though, in all seriousness, thanks so much for coming on today. I love what you shared, most of what you shared. I don't love everything that you shared, but most of what you shared was mildly decent, by the way. So thank you yeah, for being here. That. Thank you for giving up your time from your family to be here today. We really do appreciate everything that you gave. So thanks for that.
Thanks, Neil. It was awesome.
All right, guys and gals, kids and campers alike, that is it. That is all. That is, yep. That is our show today. All right, let's get down to this. Why is it people make me admit stuff that I don't want to admit on my own show? That should be rule number one. If you're going to come on my show, you don't ask me questions and you don't make me admit stuff I don't want to admit. You're not in my shoes. I'm in your shoes. I think about this table still, and I start thinking about the name cards on the table, and I start thinking about the people's names I don't want to have name cards on said table. Is there somebody in your life right now that you're still struggling with their name card being on the table with you? I don't want them at the table. I don't even want them near the table. I don't even know why they got an invitation. It got sent by mistake. Who's that person for you right now? I know you have one. My wife said to me recently, I don't have a list of people. Yes, you do. Admit it, honey. You have one. Maybe you're like my wife. You don't have one. But I would venture to guess if you really thought about it, you probably do. So before you go, before we leave, think about this today. How are you going to try to get them off your list and then welcome them back to the table with you? What steps can you take this next week to invite them in? Maybe it's a cup of coffee. Maybe it's a text. Maybe it's just a random hug. You don't have to tell them why. You could just hug them and say, you needed this. Let me know how that goes for you. You can let me know at opspodcast.com. It's a great place to let me know. You can let me know, of course, on the socials at OPS Podcast Show under Facebook, Instagram, and X. And don't forget this when you go. Please, oh, please do not forget this. Remember, when you walk in other people's shoes, you really do get a different perspective on life. I want to thank you so much for listening and stay tuned till next week when guess what? That's right. We're going to walk in other people's shoes.